What's up, everyone? Taylor May here with Security VIP. I want to thank you for tuning in to another episode of our podcast series, Your Home for Nothing But the Truth. And hey, if you're passionate about sharing the unfiltered truth and want to be featured in a community that's all about it, Security VIP is your home. Our community boasts over 2,500 end users in the security industry, spanning from sectors such as retail, gaming, entertainment, education, professional sports, healthcare, government, and even more. So whether you're eager to boost your company's visibility, showcase cutting-edge technology, or you want to address key industry changes, Security VIP is the platform for you. So if you're ready to dive in, shoot us an email at info@securityvip.net, or you can connect with us on LinkedIn at SVIP. Remember, Security VIP is your home for nothing but the truth, and we look forward to featuring you in the next episode. Stay safe.
You think you know me?
Today on Security VIP, we feature the surveillance technology manager of Cherokee Nation Entertainment, John Underwood. Get ready for nothing but the truth.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Security VIP podcast, your home for nothing but the truth. As always, I'm your host, Taylor May. And man, oh man, it has been a minute since I've had this guy individually on my podcast. He's well known in the gaming and casino sector. He goes by the name of John Underwood, the surveillance technology manager for Cherokee Nation Entertainment. Sits out of the Hard Rock Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Great, great, great mentor and leader in the gaming casino sector, and also a personal friend of mine. I've actually known John for quite many years. Him and Josh Anderson, who was on the podcast earlier. His episode will come out the following week. But you know, with John, he is the glue, I would say, to the Cherokee Nation tribe. And John, just to give you some context, man, when I spoke with Josh earlier, he said some things about you that I think you'll find very intriguing, interesting, and probably respect, because I think you are the gatekeeper when it comes to any kind of new technology or innovation or initiative that you guys are trying to push through the tribe. So I think you'll find that episode with Josh pretty enlightening, and I'll probably ask you the same question here at the end of the episode, man. But how are you doing, man? Welcome back to the podcast.
Doing well, Taylor. Thank you. Glad to have a chance to do this again.
Likewise, my friend. You've been a great personal friend of mine and someone I look up to in the industry, just you and Josh and both, man. I respect the hell out of you guys and what you guys do, but walk me through kind of that next phase and next evolution of what you guys are looking at from a security and surveillance perspective at Cherokee Nation. I mean, I know you got your hands in multiple different projects and initiatives, but is there anything particular that you guys are trying to solve right now for 2024?
Sure. A couple of things on point for us. I think everybody's looking at more cloud and things of that nature. What we can do with that and fit it into that box that is gaming, specifically tribal gaming, and how the regulation plays into it and where we can start to make those next moves to get rid of so much on-premise hardware for long-term storage of retained video from case-related things, whether that's the accident, trip and fall, some minor theft, cheats and scam stuff that we may be retaining as for future use. You know, those things, that's a lot of data that we are just sitting on physical devices for years at times when you think about how long it takes to go through the litigation process on a trip and fall, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in this state, they've got a year to file the claim. So day 364, they can file, and then you start the actual proceeding process. Mm-hmm. So you think about that and try to maintain those things for posterity here whenever we don't know what that timeline is going to look like. You know, we've had different things that, you know, say weather disaster on site years ago. We had that footage from every camera that captured some of the damage due to the back and forth with the insuring company. I think we were 9 years that we held onto that footage.
Wow.
And honestly, for what all that we saved for that and exported onto physical discs in that time, We were talking like if they wanted a new copy or they lost track of it or there's a new representation from one side or the other involved. You're talking about copying and reburning. I want to say it was close to 85 or 90 discs at that
Wow.
time of using CDs to burn all this or DVDs to burn it. So trying to get away from that and what you're trying to worry about with the redundancies and what mitigation there is, if there's any type of disaster recovery, if we did have, say, a flood, fire, tornadic damage that hit a main server room and caused it inherent damage. I mean, it could be multiple factors there with just the physical damage and then, of course, water effects. And then where are we at if that's in one set of devices in one server room? So thinking about long-term being able to provide more protection for the company by being able to retain it longer, less chances of loss of the footage or instability of the device, whatever might happen.
It's you know, this is exactly why I like talking to you, John. And Josh said the same thing about kind of the retention of this data and like the vulnerability aspect of this. I mean, obviously in gaming casinos, you have to deal with regulations in the state, you know, the gaming commission, and I understand there's certain regulations to follow when it comes to on-prem storage and on-prem data and retention. But all those vulnerabilities that you just mentioned has to have you concerned about losing all that information. And so, you know, that's the probably the migration going to cloud. I would imagine the cloud can help solve that issue.
Absolutely. I mean, we have another example for me in 2019. Everybody might remember the flooding that was going on that was all leading down from these different tributaries and things that feed into the Arkansas River in May of 2019. Massive flooding in different areas. We had one of our properties was affected. At one point of trying to get everything out, I literally went in with two electricians and two other staff members or team members, and we pulled the last servers out. And we were in that, we went into that facility, excuse me, facility via boat,
Oh, wow.
just so that we would have our last ditch effort of retaining the last semblances of footage. I mean, in an instance like that, hey, it's already gone to cloud. The equipment's insured. It is what it is.
Mean, John, do you feel like, I mean, like, I feel like the mass adoption of the gaming sector going to cloud will take some time, 100%. It's going to take a lot of education, number two, but number three, there are risks going to cloud too that I want to talk about. But do you feel like it's going to have to be a twofold aspect, a two-pong approach? Like, we're not going to fully get rid of on-prem, but the redundancy aspect of the data will remain in the cloud just in case there is a natural disaster that occurs or something happens to that server
Yeah,
room?
looking at doing where it's a bit of a hybrid to that point where you may be sending it to cloud and only retaining, say, you're retaining everything on the cloud, but
Right.
maybe the first 24 hours, or maybe say you're running a retention for a week or 10 days on-prem. That way, if there's any issues, you've got the quick jump to go back to it, physical devices on site. And then, but it's already up in the cloud. So if anything happens, you're basically dual recording that 10-day window, right? You got part of it's being mirrored up to the cloud, and you've got 10 days on site.
Right.
That's where I see it, where it's almost kind of that backup and your long-term storage.
I mean, it just makes sense. And I feel like, you know, Josh and I talked about this too. It's going to take someone proactive to kind of help mature that conversation forward to whether it means a hybrid model to an extent, or maybe you spend more 80% of your time doing everything in the cloud. But I mean, we talk about, at least on the cyber side of the industry, and this is something that's relatively new to me still, but the cyber side of the industry going from a Web 2 approach to a Web 3 approach, and the Web 3 is, you know, blockchain technology and decentralized data. But you talk about some of these cloud platforms like AWS and Microsoft Azure, and you talk about Web 3 and kind of where you move that data around, and people talk about decentralized data, but if you talk about AWS and Azure, those are kind of centralized hubs. They're not really decentralized platform. So what are you seeing as risk and vulnerabilities with cloud if you did move to cloud?
I mean, of course, everybody's main fear is, how secure is it? But
Right.
again, we're talking about the same companies that are they're storing data and hosting services up there for governmental agencies and everything else. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit of accepted risk there when you know, when you've got things that are top secret clearance and things being hosted and brand via cloud through these same companies, that there should be some level of trust there. The other is, though, I think it's into, you know, your old-fashioned data security and how it looks at password protection, phishing scams, and all that to keep the other role players out there, you know, call it the bad actors or whatnot, right, trying to find their way in. I mean, whether your data is on-prem and on a network that has access to the outside or it's in the cloud, it's similar dangers to me.
Right.
So it's about all that policy and policing about data security at that stage of it to me.
No, I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, and it's interesting, you know, you talk about the most common scams in cyber today, like they still revolve around phishing campaigns and phishing scams, you know, someone sends a creative email that looks realistic and Joe Blow Smo accidentally clicks it and then now they're exposing a vulnerability. You got to take a class. I mean, Josh and I talked about this as well, but it's, you know, that's still relevant in 2024 today. And even if the MGM scandal and the Caesars attack, like those happened on a phone line, you know, someone's impersonating someone's credentials and gained access to the system. And you know, there you go. MGM just lost $100 million in revenue, you know? So it's like, it's just, it's surprising that we still have phishing campaigns in 2024.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, I mean, we know our biggest vulnerability is going to be the human element, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be the either lazy, semi-honest, or, you know, say short-sighted decision that is a mistake. You know, they took something at face value, didn't put any thought into it, go, wait a minute, Josh never addresses me by this name, or he never puts my title in emails, or, you know, I know he uses an automatic signature and his signature is not on his email. You know, those kinds of things. I had a odd text message last night from a guy that I used to work with in a different department. It was just a random text message about access control and who installs it. And I'm like, it was just really weird.
Yeah.
To get that random one. And my first thought wasn't, oh, hey, that's so-and-so. I bet he's got some new role that, you know, this applies for him. Nowadays, that first thought is this legit? Is this really him? Is this something where our work cell numbers have gotten out and somewhere in the crossover, you know, because of things on LinkedIn and things that have been where I've spoken at different events, you know, my name's attached to access control and video security. Somebody's trying to make some weird ploy here to start that social engineering ploy. And, you know, it was legit, but I honestly almost called his former boss to make sure if they knew where he landed when he left that company.
Well, I was about to say, I mean, that has to be a solution. If you even feel an inclination of suspicion with an email or a text or a phone call, I mean, that's kind of what the recommendation I would advise on is, like, look, if you see something that's suspicious in a text, why don't you just call that person and say, hey, look, did you send me this? And they say, oh, John, no, that's not me. Then 100% you got your answer there. And same thing on the email side. And, you know, obviously if Josh sent you an email, but you notice that for whatever reason, his email signature is in his email to you, but you know, that's not normal activity. You know, you pick up the phone and call Josh, or you walk down the hall and say, hey, you seen this? So I think, but that's, you're 100% right, John, we're susceptible to the human error. And I wish everyone had the mindset to think strategically when it comes to that kind of suspicious activity. But more times than not, you know, people are not paying attention half the time, or they just click on something for the hell of it, and they don't think there's any risk. But we, in the world that we live today, and what we've seen so far on digital threats and hacking and phishing campaigns and data leaks and all those things, like, we have to be proactive now, just from a mentality perspective on the digital currents of cyber attacks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can tell you, we'll say probably Monday, I sent Josh a sample from something I exported from an application, So it came up with a weird file name, you know, auto-generated for whatever the Excel spreadsheet was where I did this export of a report. And I just sent it directly, didn't give it a new name, to Josh. First thing I got was a phone call. Did you just send me a spreadsheet? You know, I was like, yes, I did. Okay, well, it had this, you know, malarkey name of, you know, X25B34, whatever, you know, 16 digits long. And it's like, your names on spreadsheets always are to the point of whatever the topic is. So it made me wonder if this was some weird deal coming in.
I'm glad though, because, like, you know, and you would do the same thing, but, you know, Josh was smart enough to pick up the phone and validate it, right? I mean, yeah. you need that validation.
Just have to be more. The systems and the information that can be accessed through the authority level I have or different people have, they can get really deep quickly, or if nothing else, it can get them to the next person who does.
100%.
By using my sender to get there.
100%. So let's talk about a couple of recommendations. We talk about validation, making sure that you call the individual that so-and-so maybe sent you something that could have been them or could not be them. So I think it's a great recommendation. But number two that I've heard, at least in the cyber so far, instead of using passwords, use passphrases for your credentials. So type out a phrase instead of a password. And with that phrase, maybe it's, you know, I love Oklahoma State football. It doesn't have to be that long, right? But maybe you have upper or lowercase letters. I've learned that that takes more time and energy to even attack something like that or hack something like that. And hackers are not thinking like that. So that's more creative.
Using symbols instead of letters and, right, you know, the translation. I mean, this is really simple stuff, but it is out there and it does work rather than just trying to guess a password. They don't know what you like to substitute for this letter, right?
Right.
But in your mind, you've got it in there as what I always use whenever I'm doing an E or a J or whatever it might be.
What else, John, do you think would be helpful for our audience that, you know, sees attacks, not just in gaming, but just attacks in general, maybe on the physical and the cyber side, say, look, I'm afraid to fly because I feel like airplanes are going to get hacked for some reason. Like, what is your advice as another piece of education?
Not being afraid to fly, I would know, but, you know, I just think you do have to operate a little bit of faith there that everybody is at least trying to do their due diligence to take care of it and try to watch as much as they can. But
right,
I mean, even at home, you've got what, 3 hosted streaming services, probably on average, everybody's got 3 to 5, right?
Yep.
And who knows how many, you got a bank account, you've got your different credit cards and you're using apps to get into them. You know, me, I like the ones that, you know, you're using biometrics and things like that. You know, we're not going to do that. You know, you can do it with your phone and whatnot. I haven't heard of being able to hack your, you know, you're using Face ID for your bank account yet, but it is backed up by a password, but using such a hard password that you can barely remember it. And there's always the password vaults, right?
Yep.
It generates the really complicated passwords you're never going to remember. As inconvenient as those are, it is doable. And I mean, that's why, you know, we use like Microsoft Authenticator and things like that. Whenever you're wanting to do a single sign on or you're wanting to do VPN, you know, everything's being validated. It's being validated through multiple devices. So you're not just typing in and signing in, but you're using a secondary authentication through a different device to force that you had access to 2 company issued devices that are known and registered to you. I mean, they're going to have your laptop, that stored and locked in IP, and your cell phone device that is registered on that authentication system. I mean, to me, those are, yeah, they're an expense, but there's no reason not to go down that road this day and time.
No, you're right. And I'm not trying to create an environment of like paranoia, but it's like at the same time, it's like, you know, these kind of challenges and attacks, I mean, I feel like they're just so much more relevant now. I mean, they're occurring at a rapid pace, and you got to think like that.
Most of these big companies, you take, and I don't know how MGM fully closed out, but we all pretty much know, you know, a number of these different companies, they end up paying, right?
Yeah.
FBI recommends don't pay them, right? Because you're now contributing to a criminal activity, right?
Yep.
And then you paying them off rather than trying to see them prosecuted. But what's worse, get all my customers' data out there or eat that one-time cost, and hopefully we can prevent it in the future.
Right.
And there's a lot of money going out. Most of these people are getting paid.
Well, I mean, they're most getting paid, but sometimes you even hear about the attacks. Like, they try mm-hmm. to stay silent. I mean, obviously Caesar couldn't stay silent because that was just information that came up, but they paid $15 million to these hackers, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. And you're right, but like, what is the solution there? Because if anything, if you're paying off these hackers, you're just enabling them to do it again, you know?
And I think the biggest thing that they should be doing, this is just my opinion, is publicize how they did it.
Yep.
That way, hopefully, knowledge is the weapon that, hey, this is how it happened to us. I mean, for years, only one we really heard that much detail about was the Target hack, like, what, 12, 14 years ago?
Yep.
I mean, and the, was it the Atlantic City casino that got in through some Bluetooth control to a aquarium or something like that to get into that one Atlantic City casino? Those are about the only two you heard about for years.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to tell. Well, it's embarrassing to tell how it happened. Well, why don't you help educate other people? 100%. This is how it happened. This is the steps we're doing to remediate it in the future. Learn from our mistakes.
As sad as it is, man, and looking just at the general security industry as a whole, whether it was an active shooter challenge that happened quite frankly and still happens today in schools and in public places, and then you transition over to today's age and even last 12 months, obviously, with the casinos and certain hacks happening. And I'm not sure if you were affected with this, John, but like when AT&T went down for quite some time one day, about a couple months ago, and about 60 or 70% of their coverage was affected. So people didn't have cell service, you know? So it's like these, it's just like, you have to have a lens now if you're going to be in a position of surveillance and security posture that to look at that bigger picture and try to be as proactive as you can. But number one is education, and education on how you were attacked or exposed or exploited. I mean, that's a great piece of advice.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I like the different trade shows or conferences where it's a bit more of a forum style and roundtable, is they can hear the panelists talking about, this is why we did this. It's not, this is what we do. Yes, it is. But it's also, we do this because we learned from this pitfall and this hurdle we had to get past, or this failure.
Right.
And this is how we got past it. This is what we did to prevent it in the future. There's so much more value in that than just, you know, here's the top 10 steps to prevent this.
Right.
Because they can see the impact and, you know, how it was remediated.
I almost wish that we could have MGM speak about the attack, but I don't think they would be as public as you guys, you know. I mean, even if let's say Cherokee got hacked and you guys had to spend, or maybe you lost $20-30 million, maybe it was more, but whatever it may be, like I guarantee you and Josh and probably your IT team would probably educate and just be vocal about how you guys were attacked. I just feel like I get that impression.
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
Yes. I would like to think so, because I think that's one thing we've been supported in doing in this realm. When we talk about the things about the open platform systems and the non-proprietary hardware, we talk about those things because we're passionate about it. From the pitfalls we found when we came over to this side of the house from physical security, of the locked-in boat we were in. You know, any move you wanted to make, you were rip and replace, or you're stuck buying the same thing you had with no future. You're just, you're keeping that company alive because you're their last surviving customer or something.
And that's what I told Josh, and I respect you and Josh for doing this, because you guys are definitely cross collaborators with other departments without the tribe, you know, whether it's marketing or compliance, but definitely IT. Like, you guys have that synergy of not operating in a silo, like communicating on the issues and challenges, you know. And I think that's, I wish every industry operated like that. Like, it's okay to speak with your peer and your colleague in a different department and say, hey, look, this is what we're experiencing.
Yeah.
What are you experiencing? Right. I mean,
yeah. I mean, the guy that maybe he's the surveillance manager for another tribe today. He and I aren't exactly competitors. I'm not giving him trade secrets to the gaming side.
Right.
I'm just talking about best practices and successes and things for us. to protect their property better. You know, that guy who reached out to me last night, he's now at another tribe running IT for their healthcare side. And that's where all his stuff was coming from. He knew how we did things. He knew problems that we'd went through. And he's walked into a ball game where all that video and access control security are under his IT group. And that's a new ball game for him. You know, why not help them be better?
Love it, man. I love it. All right. So John, last question, man. And I asked the same question to Josh. And I said, Josh, what do you think is that game changing, you know, characteristic and element of John Underwood that he brings to the table? And I'm going to do the same thing to you. Josh answered that really well. You're going to appreciate his answer when you listen to the episode, but I'm going to flip it to you now, John. What do you feel like Josh Anderson is just like, this is my guy for this. Like, I couldn't be able to do this without him doing this. And what is that missing component or key component that Josh provides for you?
And Josh does. Josh is the great crossover guy. He can talk to any group. I don't care if it's the money guys over in finance. He can dig into the numbers with them all day long. If it's the frontline employees, and that's probably really that best thing with him, is he may be in that director level and he's got a corporate role, but he knows the name of probably almost everyone in his department. And that may be even at properties that are 2 hours away. Or if you look at our sister property all the way over in Mississippi, he knows the name of almost everybody in that room over there. And when he has to go over for meetings, he makes sure to stop in on all those shifts, see those people, talk to them, and hear about what their concerns are. So his personal touch with all the employees and people around him, and even in other departments, is really that. He creates a relationship with them. He cares about them and getting the job done, of course, but he does show empathy to their needs and makes a connection with them, and they know it's real. It's not just some made up thing that he's trying to act interested for the day.
Love it, man. You guys are just far too kind. You know, I was joking with Josh, man, because Josh went on and on about you, John. And I was like, you know what John's going to do? He's going to derail you completely when I ask him this question. But no, of course not. John's got to be a solid guy and speak highly about Josh. I love it.
Oh, yeah. No, I only razz him to his face.
Oh man, good stuff. And I know Josh will appreciate the kind words. And like I said to him, and I'll say the same thing to you, man, I've genuinely appreciated y'all's mentorship, but also y'all's friendship, just off, not only as a vendor, but just as a friend. And I do respect the hell out of both of you, and I wish continued success in the industry. And I'm always there to be your hype man. So I do appreciate you guys.
Thank you very much. And we really appreciate you in those ways too, Taylor. Really appreciate this kind of venue that you create to share messages like that.
Pleasure's all mine, my friend. Anything else that you would like to say for the audience before we say bye to this?
Not that I can dream up at the moment.
Well, guys and girls, if you guys do not know John Underwood, he's the surveillance technology manager at Cherokee Nation, sits out of the Hard Rock Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He is an OSU fan, so go Poke. So another reason why you should like John. But in all seriousness, guys and girls, please reach out to John. He is a leader in the gaming space and someone I respect the hell out of, and just a great friend. So guys, girls, if you want to check out this episode, listen to us on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Music, as well as Amazon, as well as any other major streaming platform that you guys choose to be on. You can catch us on svip.news. svip.news is our website, and connect with us on LinkedIn at svip. Catch you guys on the next one. Stay safe out there.